it's not clear-cut by any means. And in the case, the cases that I'm interested in, again, happy to talk about it more afterwards, where it's not torture, but it's exploitative interrogation or coercive interrogation, there's still a lot of sense that you, that an interrogator feels he's betraying himself because he can't or she can't get in and out of roles so quickly. There are roles, but we're one person who occupies multiple roles, and this person, whether or not it was because he was unseasoned and hadn't yet become cynical enough or whatever, but he also felt that when he first started his job, he was told, you leave your conscience behind and you follow the rules, as if Nuremberg never took place. No, that's not what I'm going to do, he said. So I take it he was a morally conscientious interrogator and would be willing to go so far, but the press of what he thought was right, even in these very complicated, exploitative relationships, kept him, I think, from torture or more or harsher techniques. I found it very, very fascinating and renewing in a certain way of my faith that there could be a kind of interrogation that maybe I would never be part of it, but others, you know, it's a profession that we should think very seriously about and understand.
Yes, sir.
What is the consensus among psychologists, et cetera, generally, the practice of indefinite detention as a policy